Climate experts agree. Cities play a key role when it comes to addressing climate change, and cities are part of the focus at the Climate Change Conference ongoing in Paris. Brian Sweat is Director of Cities and Sustainable Real Estate for Arup, a global engineering and consulting firm with offices here in Boston. He also served as the Chief of Energy, Environment, and Open Space for the City of Boston under Boston Mayor Thomas Menino. As the Climate Change Conference in Paris continues, we asked Sweat to explain the importance of cities in the context of climate change.
More than half of the world's population lives in cities, and that'll grow to over 70% by 2030. It's the front line of both addressing climate change and preparing for it. Cities are making commitments, and they're saying we need to be carbon neutral by 2050. That is far and above the nation-state commitments that are being made right now in Paris. Cities will lead states, and states will lead nation-states in solving this problem.
And they are. Cities are really driving quite a bit of the discussion and the agenda.
It's been fascinating seeing how aggressive mayors are at collaborating and being competitive around setting aggressive agendas, encouraging their citizens and their businesses to do everything they can.
In terms of the highest local priorities in dealing with climate change that can translate into global progress, both here in Boston and other major cities, what are they?
I think there are a couple issues locally that are also resonating globally. One is obviously sea level rise and making sure that we develop our cities in a way that anticipates sea level rise going forward, both in terms of our new construction and how do we develop our waterfronts, as well as how do we protect our existing buildings and structures. The other two major issues are transportation and transit, and making sure that we are providing multimodal, low-carbon ways for people to move. And then the third major issue is around energy, and there's a lot of work locally in thinking about different types of energy systems.
Well, you mentioned three priorities. Give me an example of progress in one of those areas that's pushed the debate forward.
We at Arup are working on a project in Kendall Square to evaluate energy assessment for the Kendall Square Eco District, figuring out what are the options for energy supply for that growing area and along with the City of Cambridge. That to me is a project that 10 years ago, you know, doesn't necessarily happen because it's just believed that the market will supply the energy and figure out how to do it. Cities are now playing an active role saying we have a role to guide and make sure that energy provision is low carbon, is cost effective, and is prepared for the future of climate change.
What role do you see the public-private relationship playing when it comes to fighting climate change?
It's absolutely critical that it's a collaborative relationship because a lot of the research and development is happening from the private sector. A lot of the understandings of how to bring different technologies and innovations to market should be private sector led. I think that, frankly, is one of the reasons that Boston and Massachusetts have been leaders in this field.
But there must also be some tension in that relationship, at least at times, you know, when developers perhaps are working on a particular project in a particular neighborhood and they're trying to do their best to hold their costs within the projections. And yet some public official comes around and says, yeah, but shouldn't we factor in climate change here? We know whatever you do to factor that in is going to cost money, but you need to.
So I think what we've found is that when the timeframes of people's expectations of projects are aligned, then you have the most collaborative relationships. When a developer or owner of property intends on owning it for a significant period of time, they're also thinking about the long-term viability of the property, how to market it in 15 or 20 years when the climate is different, and how to understand the impacts of the climate on the buildings and the assets. When you're working with somebody who is looking to sell a property right after they finish developing
it. Flipping it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, merchant builders, that's a harder conversation because you're asking them to make an investment in something that they may not see a return on. But I think part of the role of the public sector is to make sure that every building that is built and every project that is built has an understanding of how it is viable for its full life cycle.
So what's the future of development look like, do you think, in a city growing as fast as Boston when you factor in those issues, but when you also factor in the risks associated with coastal living and the projected sea rise?
I'd start off by saying this is not unique to Boston. But, you know, when we look at those issues, we want to design buildings that are elegant and innovative and also prepared. You know, when you tack on additional design requirements at the end of the project, that's when it gets expensive. But when you think about how to make a building resilient from the get-go, that is, you know, when you can find real great synergies. And we have great examples here in Boston. You know, the Spalding Healthcare Building has been talked about a lot. The rehab center in Charlestown that Partners Healthcare produced, that's one of the most climate resilient buildings in the country.
Because?
They thought about where to put the mechanical equipment. They put a lot of that up on the roof. They understood that the first floor should be floodable. Thought about protecting from storm surge because it's right on a Navy pier. At the end of the day, it did not cost materially more than it would have otherwise. And now they have a phenomenal example of how to build climate-resilient healthcare buildings.
As we pointed out, there's a lot of building in Boston right now. If I were to ask, is there a climate change plan for each of these buildings that's going up under a crane right now, what would the answer be?
The question is being asked. So when I was Chief of Environment, Energy, and Open Space under Mayor Menino, we put into place a design questionnaire around climate resiliency for all major projects along the waterfront. I think that was intentionally done to say we don't have one right answer. The city should want and continues to want every major developer to think about the long-term life, the full life cycle of the asset that they're building.
So the city is asking developers to think about factoring in climate change, climate resiliency in their new buildings, but it's not necessarily requiring changes to be factored in.
One of the nuances in Massachusetts is that the building code is controlled at the state level. The actual requirements for building code around flood areas and future flood areas is controlled at the state level. And that is an area where Massachusetts certainly could improve. And one of the challenges is we need to understand how buildings should be planning for their future.
You know, more and more people, as we pointed out, are moving into cities. Boston is experiencing a surge in building. Cities expected to play a key role in leading the charge against climate change. How does all of that square up?
I view it as an opportunity more so than a challenge, because when you have growing cities and when you have growing businesses and investments in cities, then you have an opportunity to do things differently. There's an efficiency both economically and from a climate perspective of density.
Brian Sweat, Director of Cities and Sustainable Real Estate for AirUp, a global engineering and consulting firm with offices here in the Boston area. Thanks a lot for speaking with us on Morning Edition.
It's been a pleasure.